better you get.
Have another beer.
No, I want to go home to my own room to sleep in my own bed. I don't want another beer.
Would you like another beer?
Oh, yeah.
I've made my choice, and I choose me.
Lover.
I'm shopping.
Pay careful attention and don't look annoyed.
You are now listening to the Pop-Up Podcast. It's quite literally a podcast for whatever pops up. Here's the host of the show, director, producer, writer, and however else you know him, Pete Ferrero.
Hey, we're live on Facebook and we're live everywhere. For the Pop-Up Podcast this week, I thought I'd reconnect with Mike Walter, who is my first repeat guest, which is exciting.
Oh, hey! Yeah.
And I thought,
are you drinking? I thought you might be drinking.
I am. No, last I am.
Time, I am only doing coffee. I made a promise of no day drinking, so I'm gonna wait till 5 o'clock. And I know
I hear you
somewhere, but no, I'm gonna wait.
I went with Corona.
That's very bold of you. I'm not afraid.
You know,
I would imagine you can get some good deals on Corona nowadays.
The poor Corona company must be like, yeah, it's not us, guys.
Yeah, I don't know how many. Although I think if anyone who's dumb enough to think that, probably my guess is they weren't drinking Corona.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know why I would give the Corona drinkers that much credit for being a little bit more intellectual than that. But yeah, I'd like to think.
And so what we're going to do today is talk about music you should be listening to during, well, just some suggested listening. You could listen to whatever you want, but just some ideas about what you should be listening to. Paul Anthony, you know Paul Anthony, the DJ.
Sure.
Yeah. He shared an article. He didn't write the article, but he just shared it about getting back to like listening, right? You know, we have this opportunity sort of in this moment.
I'm sorry, you froze up for 1 second. Getting back to listening to albums.
Yeah, or albums, full records, getting back to listening in general, you know, taking the moment and, you know, now that you have some time, you can just dive into a record instead of a Netflix show.
I got to be honest, Peter, it's one of the things I love about running is sometimes when I run, I will put on an album, track one, side one, and just listen throughout. And yeah, I mean, there's a lost art to that. I certainly grew up listening to albums that way. And you're old enough that you grew up listening to albums
totally.
That way.
Yeah.
And I do. I think that that's a lost art for some kids, millennials, whatever you want to call it, that and really music started this way as a single thing. You know, 50s and even 60s artists, it was more about the single, releasing a single song with a B-side, but hardly anybody paid attention. And you can credit whoever you want, whether it was the Beatles or some of those other great 60s bands, but they kind of made the album a true art form. And now it's almost like we've returned to that. Like, I don't even know if Lil Nas X released an album last year, but his song was number one for the longest time ever on Billboard. So
interesting.
Yeah. I'm going to assume he did release an album, but I didn't get it. I mean, and yet I played Old Town Road, you know, 100 times last year.
It's also interesting because of how we listen to music now. Like I went back and started listening to actual records. Like, I don't know.
So you're talking about vinyl.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I'm so disappointed in myself that for anyone who knows Peter and is watching this and doesn't know my background, I'm a DJ. And so
wait, hold up. Cheers, by the way. Cheers.
Cheers, Peter, to your health, to your happiness.
Same.
Stay
to you.
Safe.
Yep.
Let's hope we're going to Met games sometime soon.
Only hope. Yeah.
So yeah, when I moved on from vinyl, I sold all my vinyl. I sold my record. And to this day, I kind of kick myself about that.
Sure.
Now, listen, I'm not as romantic about vinyl as some people get, but yeah, I mean, I wouldn't mind the old fashioned, put a needle on a record, listen to it all the way through. I mean, you can certainly do it digitally, and I do it on my phone digitally all the time. But yeah, I think there is certainly that tactile thing of
Listening to the crispiness of, you know, like the record sound and all that.
Right.
I mean, it is a pain in the ass to have to get up and flip it over, or if it skips, like Spotify doesn't skip, you know,
In today's day and age, is that really a pain in the ass? I mean, what we're living through now is having to get up. And I mean, listen, I'm old enough to remember we didn't have a remote control on our TV.
Right.
I remember when a show was over, my dad would look in the TV guide and go, okay, the next show we want to watch is on channel four, and somebody would have to get up and click, 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 and turn.
Do you remember the remote box that you that was like a box that you pressed the numbers on? Do you remember that thing?
That was a cable thing, Peter.
Yeah.
And I grew up in Queens, New York. Queens was the last bastion of no cable. I didn't even have cable when I was in high school. So most of my generation that fell in love with MTV, I barely saw MTV as a kid because it hadn't come to Queens yet. When I would go over friend's house in Brooklyn and watch it, but I missed out on a lot of that. So I remember my cousin out on Long Island had a cable box like that,
sure.
But I didn't get a chance to witness it until much later.
Yeah, it was a trip. You didn't miss much. Yeah. I mean, I think if you went right to the remote, you're okay. But let me ask you, before we jump into all this stuff, how is the coronavirus hitting you and affecting you? And do you prefer calling it the coronavirus, or do you like to refer to it as the president as the Chinese virus?
I'm going to go with coronavirus.
I'm good with that as well.
I'm not sure if Trump is, if it's a dog whistle racist type thing. But to me, it's similar to the R word.
Once
people pointed out that that's offensive, I stopped using it.
Yeah.
If Asian Americans say, look, man, that's just offensive to me, can we not call it that? Certainly. Let's call it COVID. Let's call it coronavirus. And there are enough instances in the news of Asian Americans being spit on and you know.
Oh, it's horrific.
So, I mean, if we can stop calling it the China virus or Chinese virus or,
right.
I mean, I got to be honest, when I first heard Kung Flu, it actually did kind of make me laugh. But right. As soon as I heard it, I was like, yeah, okay, it's funny, but let's not
say that. Right. Yeah. But he really, you know, he just, when he sticks with something, sometimes I also wonder how much of it is calculated and how much it's by accident. Like, is him saying on Twitter, like, he's angry on Twitter at some point and then just writes the Chinese virus, you know what I mean? And now it catches on to a thing because he tweeted it, and now he just keeps calling it the Chinese virus? Or does he have somebody in his research team that's like, you know, what would be good is if you started referring it to it as the Chinese virus?
I don't even know. You're right. I don't know if it's that calculated either. He does have that guy in I think he's a cabinet member. Is it Stephen Miller, I think?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who is, I mean, if you go back and look at any of his stuff, he is a racist and a xenophobe
totally.
And everything else. And so he might have been the first one to kind of plant that, hey, call it the China virus. But yeah, I mean, at this point, he's going back to Trump, not Stephen Miller. He's so stubborn that the fact that anyone has pointed out to him that you shouldn't say that, you should be now. There's no way he's going to stop. There's absolutely no way.
Yeah, he's bullheaded that way for sure.
But I also, I mean, going back to the people who spit on Asian Americans or Asians, I don't know that they need encouragement. People like that are just racist, ignorant people anyway. So it's not like, well, if Trump hadn't called it a China virus, they wouldn't be, they'd be treating Asian Americans nicely. No, I don't think so. You know?
Well, it all depends on how you look at it though, too, because I mean, I feel like in this time I've gotten to do a lot of great things and maybe have been writing and you know, doing, having some great personal growth. Right. So you could actually look at it, this virus, as being a good thing. I know it's not a good thing for the people that are, you know, going through the illness itself. But this time alone and with yourself and or with your loved ones or with your family is time that you never really get to have. Right. So,
you know what, Peter, that's a very silver lining way to look at it. And I agree with that. And if it was 4 days and right? and business wasn't coming to a screeching halt,
sure,
I would agree with that. I mean, listen, I'm a big proponent of getting away when you can. I love the beach in the summertime.
Yes.
Matter of fact, I cut down on my DJing schedule. The door behind you is slowly opening.
It's a cat.
I just listen. If somebody was coming in to murder you, it would have made for a good podcast. I
mean, everybody would have been definitely tuning into the live feed.
We would have had a lot of views. So what was I? Yeah. So I mean, I'm a big proponent of shutting down, and this is certainly the biggest shutdown. But I'm having a tough time seeing the silver lining of this.
Sure.
When so many people, so many lives, I mean, forget the people who are sick and are going to die. Yes,
right.
That's, but how many businesses are going to go out of business? How many people are going to suffer?
Yeah.
Almost.
It's horrific.
Economic hardship that is almost unrecoverable. I mean, it's one thing, you know, listen, knock wood, I've got pretty good savings. Elite actually had a very good first quarter booking. So we will survive this. How far I have to dip into my personal savings is the only question at this point.
That's stressful.
But there are businesses that are going to go. I mean, we have a restaurant, Kelly and I, literally right up the road. And we actually went there right before the shutdown. And we were like, well, we're supporting this. We went there Friday night. We bought some takeout from them. And they were like, thank you, thank you, thank you. I'm like, no, I'm doing this for selfish reasons. I want you to remain in business. Right, like, exactly. If I can help you now, because we want 6 months from now, we love this place. We want it open. But and the couple that owns it were defined. Where they're like, oh, where are we going? We're going to be here. But you know what? If this keeps up for long enough, I don't know.
Yeah, we're all going to be. I'm sure it's going to be
tough.
Mortgage
or rent or whatever. So yeah, good for you that you can see a silver lining.
Well, I'm trying to, you know, and I'm actually interviewing a whole bunch of chefs later tonight about what's been going on and how it's affected all their businesses. I mean, I think the restaurant industry is going to get hit really hard with this. And obviously, I think our industry, the wedding industry, is going to get hit really, really hard with this as well.
Well, I mean, you know what though, Peter, it's different. Have you seen mostly postponements or
all? Yeah. Okay.
Last week we moved 80 weddings.
Yeah. That's insanity.
Three of them canceled.
Right.
So, that's three events that aren't going to happen, but I think 78 of the 80 pushed to later this year. So calendar 2020 is going to look very similar to what it was going to look like before this. But for restaurants, I mean, you can't make up for this time. Like last weekend's never going to happen again. Now, I suspect that when we finally get out of this, they're going to have a blip because people are just going to be like, I got to get the fuck out of that. Oh, shit. Am I allowed to curse?
That's fine. It's fine. Okay. Yeah.
But that's going to be short-lived, and that's certainly not going to make up. Let's say it's 6 weeks that we're all shut in, and I'm trying to be optimistic. One big boom of a week isn't going to make up for 6 weeks of lost revenue. So,
no.
I mean, like a friend of mine is a club DJ in Pittsburgh. He's missing out on nights that will never come back. I mean,
exactly.
I'm going to have a busier summer now than I was supposed to. All my March and April weddings have pushed to the summer, but I'm still going to make that money. But
exactly.
It's the lost revenue So are you going live tonight with chefs? Because I want to tune into that.
Yeah, definitely. I think we're going to go live and we're going to all chit chat about, you know, what's going on, what that crisis has been like for all of them. But to the wedding industry, because I feel like all of us are affected in different ways, and the venues obviously have it the worst probably because they have to now find a new date for this couple. And then now for the couples, it's even horrible because now they have to get everything that they simply, like they aligned to move to this new date.
Yeah.
And it's been, like you said, like it's been fine. Like, I mean, I'm able to, you know, and I also like have crews that I send out. So if it's not, you know, they might not get me right. If they were scheduled to get me, that might be a change. But for the most part, all the dates have sort of situated themselves as of this moment. Knock on wood, I guess we're gonna do. But you know, it is scary, and I can see why people would want to cancel their dates as well. You know, like just
I
don't know
get
what to
it.
Do.
I mean, listen, Kelly and I got married 7 years ago. Next week,
I was there.
Right, yep. I know. Peter, you guys, you and your crew did an amazing job. Mm-hmm. And as they say in Casablanca, there was the beginning of a wonderful friendship, Peter.
Yes, absolutely.
But I mean, had this exact thing happened 7 years ago, you know, when Kelly and I first got engaged, it was our second marriage. So our first thought was, let's just do a destination wedding.
Sure.
But then, I mean, me being the party animal and in the industry, I was like,
you know what?
I really want to throw. But had this monkey wrench come along, I think we might have just said, you know what? It wasn't meant to be. Let's just, as soon as we can, let's just fly where we want to go, bring the family. And so I can see that. But I also have to say, and maybe this is just my knowledge of the industry, I would have accepted the fact that deposits were non-refundable. If we had called off the wedding, I would have said, you know what? The money we've given Peter, the money we've given Kirk, our photographer, we can't get it back. I get that.
Because you're choosing to cancel.
But I also will say this. I know some people in the industry who are telling their clients, look, I will reschedule your date, but I need that balance that you were going to pay me now. If that had been the case, Peter, I think I would have said, sorry, Peter, I'm not giving you any extra money. Because
it is a challenge. I agree with you. I wouldn't do that. You know what I mean? Because you just have to roll with the current situation and figure out what you're going to do internally for money. You know what I mean? But also by the same token, I don't know where you're going. There's nothing. I understand you have, you know, mortgages and all this other stuff, you know, right. But like,
yeah, I mean, I'm trying to put myself in my client's position. They're same. Probably out of work now too. You know what I mean? So who am I to, I've seen some people say, well,
it's crazy.
I'm only going to ask them for half of the money that they were going to pay me. And then they can owe me the other half six. And I'm like, man, if you can do that, good for you. A, I think my clients would say, screw you. We're not giving you another penny. But B, I couldn't in my heart do that because I'm thinking these people are suffering just like we are. They're probably either furloughed or filing for unemployment or something else. So, and if they're not, they're an emergency worker probably going to a hospital or something else. So who am I to ask them for more money?
No, absolutely not. But like you said, in terms of the deposits, and if they, you know, then I absolutely understand that. But what was it like having to reschedule almost 80 dates? That must have been, because I had to reschedule four and I was in a almost panic attack.
I've got a great office staff, Lynn and Dominic, who, you know, so the three of us basically handled it. We have an online system where we can check availability right away. My DJs were phenomenally cooperative. A number of my guys, for example, have full-time jobs, so they don't take Friday night work because it's virtually impossible to get out of a job on 5 o'clock on a Friday and make it to somebody's wedding. It's impossible in your industry as a videographer. Sure. A DJ might be able to do it. But so anyway, a lot of these weddings move to Friday nights, and in hopes of keeping the original DJ, I would contact, I think you know Jay Thompson,
yeah,
Phil Walsh, Dan Famosa. These are some of my guys who have full-time jobs. And every one of them each time said, I'll open the date. I'll take a half day at work. I'll take a vacation day. I don't want to disappoint these clients. So for the vast majority of our clients, they have not only been able to move the date, but they've kept the original DJ.
Yeah.
So that has made it, you know, logistically, it was a lot of work last week. I told Kelly, I've never worked harder than I did last week for no money.
I was going to say, and there's no income anywhere.
Usually when I work, I mean, I had four 12-hour days last week. Yeah, I'm not complaining, but usually if I put in four 12-hour days in a row, I make some bank. Like, it means I had some.
Right.
I had a great day. I had great days at the office, or a couple of great gigs. So, I mean, at the end of everything, I cut myself a $500 check on Monday. So, yeah, I worked. I got paid less than minimum wage last week. But again, that's woe is me. At least I'm in a position where we could do it.
Yeah,
you know, you're turn down okay. Any of that work, you know. So,
Yeah, I mean, it's been weird, and I'm sure every industry has their own sort of stories of like what they're dealing with in every aspect of it. One of the people that shoot for me, you know, their husband is in the medical industry and works in a hospital, so they're seeing all this on the front line. So for us to be, you know, not complaining, but talking about, oh my God, we got to move all those dates.
Right.
It's like, well, they're literally facts. Putting it's them. Just,
you know. Right. I am not on the front line whatsoever. I'm not taking credit for that. Yeah, I mean, we basically, it was 12-hour days sitting at a computer talking to brides, either phone calls or emails, checking logistics, texting DJs. And so, I mean, was it hard work and was it stressful work? To me, the worst part was the emotion of it.
Yeah.
You know, again, yes. I think I would have been able to relate anyway, but the fact that this was us 7 years ago, Kelly and I got married March 30th. So we would have been in the eye of the storm.
Totally.
So my heart broke. A friend of mine put up a video, I think it was Friday morning, of Nora Jones, who's one of my favorite artists. Love her. That was our wedding song, was Come Away With Me.
Yeah.
Singing the Guns N' Roses song Patience.
Nice.
And I think it was Friday morning, and I just clicked on the link over breakfast, and from the opening lyric, Peter, I sobbed like a baby. And I was just like, I just had all this pent up sadness and emotion, and it was,
I've been crying all week, and sometimes I don't even know what I'm crying about.
Right. Yeah But yeah, I mean, that probably goes to the theme that you want to talk about, because music, can just drill down and tap into emotion so powerfully. And as a DJ, I think it's more powerful than any other medium as far as art goes. I mean, movies move me, and books, certainly. I'm an avid reader, but to me, I don't think anything would have made me sob like a baby Friday morning or get pumped up. I made a mix last week of songs that are just happy, upbeat, positive message songs. I got pumped up putting the mix together. I've gotten pumped up listening to it twice. And the feedback I've gotten, because I shared it on my Mixcloud page, has been overwhelming. Like
so talk let's okay, so while we're here and we're jumping into songs that we should be listening to, let's talk about your mix. What was the motivation with the mix? You just kind of talked a little bit about it, but what were you thinking about in terms of the songs that you wanted to put in, and what songs did you put in it?
We'll
go through each one of the songs and why you kind of...
And by the way, if anyone wants to hear it, because there's nothing worse than talking about music, it's like...
It's almost like Food Network.
About sex.
Like Food Network, you see this beautiful dish come out, right. And you're like, fuck.
And you're going, great, I'd really like to have that. So yeah. If you want to look for me on Mixcloud, DJ Mike Walter is the name. So, and I put it up, I think I called it Good Vibrations.
Awesome. Mix.
So my goal in putting it together, Peter, was we need positivity right now. People just need positive vibes and positive energy. And again, I'm a strong proponent of the fact that music can do that. I did a seminar last year about music to my industry, to DJs. And I talked about music can literally change people's moods. I mean, there are songs that depress me. There are songs that get me pumped up. There are songs right. that get me angry. You know what I mean? Like how is it that some chords that somebody plays and lyrics that they come up with can literally change your mood? Well, music right. has that power. Has it for me, and it has it for a lot of people I knew. So I just felt last week like, goddamn, a lot of people I know are down and solemn and sad. And I just wanted to put something together that spoke to that and tried to change that mood. So that was, I picked there.
That's the goal.
I mixed 32 songs in a little over an hour. And I think they all kind of have that theme. You know.
So what were some of the songs that you explored, and what were some of the themes that you explored in the
So
mix?
I opened up with Lean on Me. I did the nice. Club. I did the 80s remake, the Club Nouveau, just because it has a little bit more of a funkier beat.
Sure.
It's easier to beat mix. So Eminem, Lose Yourself, love it. It's one of those songs that just pumps me up. And then I got a little obscure with the next track, and my friend Hank was live commenting as he was listening. Do you know the Argent song, Hold Your Head Up?
I do love, and I love yeah. that song. Yeah.
So I mixed that in, and I was pretty happy with that, because it you know, I think for a lot of people might not recognize that song, but they'll definitely be moved by it. And then I just went from there. I mean, listen to the music by the Doobie Brothers.
Good one.
I did some disco stuff. I did like Good Times and Ain't No Stopping Us Now. I did the Three Dog Night, Jeremiah Was a Bullfrog, which everybody knows as, yeah. you know, Joy to the World.
Sure, yeah. Probably the closest religious thing that you did, right? It's a very...
Probably, yeah. Is there anything else religious on it? Probably not, no.
No.
I was pretty happy. I put Let's Go Crazy, you know, a huge
of course.
Prince fan.
Yeah.
And I was just trying to think, like, what's the most upbeat? And I was listening to it again this morning, and when he talks about, you know... when the elevator tries to break you down, go crazy, punch a higher floor. I think that's such a great. And then, of course, the line about if you don't like the world you're living in, take a look around. At least you got friends.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And I think those are great messages. I found a great remix of the U2 song, Beautiful Day. I put that in there.
Sure.
So just, you know, songs like that that hopefully will just cheer people up.
Now, what about personally? You said you heard the Come Away With Me or a Norah Jones song.
Patience.
Yeah. Yeah. But I my wife also we made a mix of for our wedding, we made a mix of songs that was for everybody that was sort of like in the bridal party, and the one my wife picked for me was also Come Away With Me. But
oh, cool.
That was
Kelly and my wedding song from the very when we first started dating. Norah Jones was bursting on the scene, and just that song was like our song. And so when we got engaged, that was probably the easiest decision we made about our wedding was, you know, when we said wedding song, we both went, Come Away With Me, right? I mean, it was just
that's kind of funny because I would think that's the most complicated song or the complicated part of your wedding.
Yeah, you would think, but I mean, it was just, and when I meet with couples that are struggling about picking a wedding song, I ask them, I say, well, when you first started dating, did you have a song? And not every couple does, but I don't know that I've ever been in a significant relationship with anybody and we didn't have like a song that was
Of course.
So
yeah.
I mean, it was a pretty easy decision for Kelly and I to make. And I mean, still to this day, like we remember, you know, we honeymooned in Iceland and we've been back a couple times. And there was one time we were walking through a supermarket in Iceland and it came on the on the Muzak or on the music, and we're literally, the two of us are just like dancing in the aisle. So nice. I mean, it's kind of a cool song because we hear it, but not all the time. You know what I mean? Like, so we hear it every once in a while, but it's not like you hear it. It's not like Perfect by Ed Sheeran that just
right. Exactly. It's a rarity. It's a rare. Yeah. You know, it's not one that you hear often. Now, I have a question. Being a diehard Prince fan, do you hear Prince immediately if you're in a store like that?
Yes.
I'm a diehard Stones fan.
You're a big Stones fan, and I would imagine the same thing, right?
It's crazy. Like, I remember one time I was in L.A., and I was just, you know, I was just outside somewhere, and I heard Paint It Black in a pickup truck that was miles away coming towards me.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, you could just hear, you know exactly what the riff is, you know exactly what song it is, you know. And sometimes I'm like, is this like my universe is letting me know, like, pay attention?
It's so funny. Kelly believes that stuff more than I do.
I imagine.
we spent a day in Newark recently before.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, just kidding.
No, you know what? We actually, Peter, it was fun. There were a couple things we wanted to see. It was actually on purpose. We went and we were walking down the street at one point, and as we passed the store, Prince was playing.
Right.
And she was like, see, it's the universe. And I'm like, he's a popular artist. Of course, the odds are every once in a while we're going to hear a Prince song. So, yeah, I mean, I don't buy into that universe is playing a Prince song for me. But to me, whether it's fate or destiny or whatever, it's still nice to hear your favorite artist or favorite song. And I mean, I'll take it to another level. I get text messages all the time from friends who say, hey, I just heard, you know, a Prince song and I'm thinking about you. And listen, if my love of Prince can make people think of me in certain moments, I'm great with that. I'll be honest, there are plenty of times I hear a Stone song and I wonder how you're doing. So
yeah, I mean, it's funny, like, and people say that to me. I mean, you know, and you know, ex relationships and things of that nature, you know, they always say if they hear, you know, Start Me Up or Tumbling Dice or something like that, it reminds them of me. I love that. You know, I want that to be like part of my association for sure, you know?
Yeah, I'm cool with that. I think you're the biggest Rolling Stones fan I know.
Right.
I know this. When I think Stones, I think of you. So
that's
if
cool.
I think if I had a bigger Rolling Stones fan than I was aware of, he would be first, or she would be first to come to mind.
Yeah, totally.
And there are a number of artists like that. Like I a friend of mine in Colorado, Ron Michaels, is a huge Doobie Brothers fan. I hear Doobie Brothers, I think of Ron Michaels. I hear you too. I think of, you might know Bobby Albrecht. You know Bobby All?
He's I a don't. DJ. But yeah, I have somebody that I think of too for
yeah,
for
I mean, there are certain artists that as soon as I hear it, I think of one specific person. And I think that that's kind of cool.
That's pretty cool. I think that's awesome about music.
Yeah.
I will share a story though, like about the universe and all that. One time I was at, this is what triggered me to say, well, maybe there is a music universe thing that's happening. And one time I was at a bar in Nashville, and this was when we were signing the deal for The Price of Fame, and I was typing into the jukebox, because you can do that now. I don't know if you know that. You can do the app. You can put the song.
Oh, yeah.
A lot.
What is that called? Touchstone?
Touchtunes or something like that.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes, yes.
So I started to
Which
type
Which offends
in...
me, because if you see it in a bar, it says, you can be the DJ now. Right. Like, kind of not quite, but okay, if you want to go with that.
no, you cannot. Yeah. but anyway, so I started to type in can't, and I never got to, I was going to play Can't You Hear Me Knocking in the bar, and I never got the opportunity to finish anything. I just put can't. And then it played in the bar. The song Can't Hear Me Knocking played in the bar. And I was so confused because I was like, I never finished it. And I looked at my thing and still said can't. And I was like, what the? Why? How? What is happening? So to Kelly's point, you know, that's the universe.
So here's my big thing, Peter. Yes. If there is some...
There's definitely a music. There's definitely a music god.
If there's some divine puppeteer that could control, hey, Peter's in this bar, let me play this song for him.
Fair.
Why couldn't he have stopped that guy from eating the bat and causing
coronavirus? Sure, fair enough.
So, that's my biggest thing about any belief in a higher power.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, why couldn't they have made September 11, 2001, a rainy day so that those planes didn't take off? Why couldn't he have made sure that whatever disease was floating around that wet market in China didn't create? So, I mean, it's nice to think of somebody that's controlling these small little things of, you know, me hearing Prince when I walk by a store,
Oh, but it's definitely on purpose.
Could you get on the bigger things then, please? If you have that power, could you?
Well, maybe God is like Mozart or something like that.
He's more focused on music. All right. Well, music, I'd like perhaps. Him to be focused on other things.
I'm with you on that point. But you know, I don't know. Like, I don't know what every small detail in someone's life is. You know, I know that it's like. Like even just with this virus as it is right now, you know, people are living, even though there are people dying, there are people living, going through something, changing their lives or making a difference somewhere in their own way. Maybe somebody watching this has been writing something or drawing something that's going to be something that we all see something at some point.
Listen, I get that. A friend of mine put on Facebook the other day, you know, maybe God just wanted us all to reset.
I saw that.
Yeah. I think that's very nice to think, but an all-loving, all-knowing God needed to kill thousands of people to get us all to reset. Couldn't even come up with another way to do it. You know what I mean? I don't know. That's
fair enough.
That's
yeah,
my I mean, we're, I know you we, want to we, talk about music and not religion. Yeah,
we jumped into the deep end.
This happens
of the pool.
All the time, though. You and I like.
But having said that, this is a part of the process of the coronavirus or the Chinese virus, whatever you want to call it, because you know this is what's happening. We're stuck inside, so we're having these kinds of conversations that we probably
although I think you and I have had similar conversations
totally.
At Met Games, so it's not like we didn't need this to create
absolutely anyway. Well, anyway, so I've been listening to full records. I was shocked to know they still make full records,
and they still the last few years vinyl is the only part of the music industry that's on the rise.
How about that one? Taylor Swift, 1989.
That's a good album. Actually, I can't say I've ever heard the whole album.
Me either.
Front to
back.
The singles that came off of it, obviously, especially Shake It Off, I'm painfully familiar with. But
are you not a Taylor Swift fan?
I'm not a Taylor Swift hater, but I'm not a fan. Yeah.
Right. I think she is the voice of this generation. People are like, dislike. She is the Stones. She is Prince. She is this artist of this generation. Like, I mean, the lyrical content on all the songs on this record is absolutely phenomenal. I know she's talking about heartbreak and love and all this kind of stuff and her bad reputation.
Has she ever not written about heartbreak?
I don't know.
Well, and listen,
I don't think she did. I say that
half facetiously, but to me, that is a limitation of an artist.
Sure.
If you only have one lane, to me, it doesn't show. Like, I'd like to hear, and maybe Taylor Swift fans out there can enlighten me.
I'm not familiar with
any other theme of hers other than fuck you, you fuck me over, now fuck you. Like, that seems to be her big theme.
I don't have the new record Lover on me here, but there's a few songs that I think are about her mom's illness.
Did you see her Netflix documentary?
I loved it. Yeah, I thought it was.
I thought it was amazing.
An amazing doc. You know, just so interesting to see. I'm always fascinated with documentaries about seeing what someone's life is like.
As a documentarian, I'm sure you also watch it for the process. Wow,
sure.
How did they go about making that? I did find a little bit of a stretch. I think at one point they were trying to make me feel bad for her that she still hasn't found her man when she's had this wild ride of success. And yet she hasn't had time to find her man. Like, screw you. You've gone on to become one of the most famous people in the world.
Right.
But to me, the part that I loved was the songwriting stuff.
So incredible.
That process fascinates me. So the fact that she let cameras into the room to see her working out songs with some of her producers, that was worth the
look at the songs on this record. This is before Lover. I mean, you know, Blank Space, Right Style, another
I know
hit.
Blank Space. I don't think I know Right Style.
No, it's just Style. Shake It Off, obviously, is what you said. Bad Blood, right?
Bad Blood, I mean, know.
So these are all hits. You know what I'm saying? Like,
please tell me you didn't bring me on here to talk about Taylor Swift.
No,
okay.
No, I have more records, but I went in case someone was
listening. I felt like Colonel Jessup in A Few Good Men there. Please tell me you didn't bring here to talk. What does he say? Talk about flight plans or whatever. Please tell me that.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's one record.
I don't have any cute records to hold up.
Well, no, you could just talk about, you don't have to hold anything up. You could just then now talk about a record.
All right. So, first of all, I'm going to give a plug to a friend of mine, one of our DJs and one of my good friend's sons. He's in a band called Moonwater.
Okay.
And the Friday before the world got shut down, they played at the Saint in Asbury. You familiar with it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, and Kelly and I were there, and hopefully nobody in the crowd had the coronavirus, because if so, the Saint is a tiny little bar, and we were there. So if anybody, I think
it's coming your way, and you've got what, 7 days?
It's been 2 weeks, so hopefully okay. We're past the period. But so I'll just say, as far as listening to new music lately, Moonwater released an EP, which you can get on any of the, you know, you can get it on iTunes, you can stream it. I think it's great. It's good, high energy, fun rock, alternative rock kind of stuff. And again, knowing a member of the band and having gotten to see them a few times. But yeah, that's been, as far as new music that I've downloaded and been cranking, Moonwater is one of them.
All right. So Moonwater, check that out.
And as it turns out, I love live music. I love going to see live music. So Moonwater's show that night will probably be the last concert that I see for quite some time. I mean, Kelly and I had three shows coming up in April, back to back to back. We were going to go see Colin Hay.
Nice.
The singer from Men Down Under. Then Sinead O'Connor, who was one of my all-time favorite female singer. And I'd argue better than Taylor Swift, but
I was going to say Taylor Swift's my favorite female singer.
and then we were also going to go see Billy Joel. All three of those obviously have been postponed or canceled or whatever. But I love live music, and it's kind of weird that whenever I'm finally able to go back to attending a show, Moonwaters will have been the last one I attended. You know.
To just real quickly divert us back to the wedding thing, I shot a wedding on March 14th.
I DJ'd a wedding that night. Yeah,
I mean, and was that challenging for you to get people, because of the whole social distancing thing? No, it was not.
People partied that night almost. That party was great, and I felt like it was almost like Prince's 1999, which is a song about the apocalypse is coming, so let's party. I almost had that vibe in the crowd. Like, everybody felt like the world's about to end, so let's go out, celebrate. It was a great, great party.
For me, I was the opposite. You know, it was a lot of social distancing, small dancing, and people not being very cautious about being together.
Dominic had two that night, that weekend, and he said Friday was like what you're describing. Saturday was like, so I guess some of it had
to
depends
do with the crowds. It depends on the couple and the DJ. Now, I don't know if it's the DJ, but it definitely depends on because I feel like the DJ is working with a handicap at that point. You know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
He's not going to be able to get everybody to be together if there's a rule that you says you got to be distant,
right?
You know, but it was a very eerie, kind of awkward thing. The couple was wonderful, so they're not eerie and awkward, but it was like this sense of what is coming next. Do you have any couples that are like that have dates that have not postponed yet?
We have a few late April ones that are basically saying we're gonna wait, and I don't blame them either.
Yeah,
first of all, what's the difference whether you postpone now or postpone 2 weeks from now? I don't think there's much of a difference. I mean, obviously you could make an argument that the dates are going at these banquet,
you want to get a better date. Yeah,
if you've conceded to the fact that, hey, if I move this wedding, I'm gonna have to pick an off date anyway. I mean, we're seeing a lot of Thursday night movement.
Yeah,
we're seeing a lot of these.
I'm having that too.
So I mean, if you, other than that fact, you might as well wait. I mean, Kelly and I have a similar situation. We're supposed to go on our big vacation on May 22nd.
Oh, that's not happening, Mike.
You know what?
I'm just kidding.
Yeah. I think Kelly is leaning more towards, it's not happening. But like we talked about over the weekend,
maybe I should be interviewing Kelly.
What's the difference if we cancel now or we cancel 3 weeks from now? There's no difference. So we might as well.
You're right
about
that.
I'm the eternal optimist. I'm saying, we're getting on that fucking plane May 22nd. We're going to Scotland. Right. That's our big vacation. But if it doesn't,
that's
going to
be awesome.
Listen, we have planned this vacation ad nauseum. We're super psyched to go. I'm holding out hope that we can go. But if we can't go, we can't go. It's not the end of the world.
No.
But why cancel now? Why cancel now? And then, you know, if 3 weeks from now we flatten the curve and everything starts going back to normal, and then we're sitting there on May 22nd going, why do we cancel? So,
I agree. I feel like May is that middle place.
I don't blame
place.
Your late April brides.
Yeah,
for saying,
same.
We're going to hold out.
Yeah, I think there's nothing wrong with that. Okay, I got another one. This will be probably more familiar for you, maybe. Band on the Run.
The Wings. Great
Wings
album.
Wings album. Yeah.
Was that his first after leaving the the Beatles?
I think so. Yeah, I think, yeah. I think, let's see. You know what's cool? I've been doing too, you know, because it's like something you can't do anymore, but you could pull the thing out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, listen, records are very, you know? Are a very tactile thing.
The lyrics are here, you know, yeah. Like it's cool, man. You know, I sort of miss that about music.
Yeah.
You know, now I know like on Spotify, they like have like the lyric songs, right?
Right.
Where the lyrics pop up on the songs, but this is Paul and Linda, right?
Right. I remember.
Band
remember
on the Run, Jet is on this. Let Me Roll It.
Yeah. God. The hook on Let Me Roll It is one of the most underrated. You know, your guy, Keith Richards, wrote some amazing hooks.
Riffs? Yeah.
That riffs, whatever you want to call it.
Sure, either way.
Yeah, Let Me Roll It. How does that go?
I love it, yeah.
Oh, God, it's so
infectious. If you're watching this, play it. Yeah. Not us, but we're not playing it because they'll turn us right off.
Yeah, I don't want to get muted. I remember Lennon gave an interview in the late 70s, and it might have actually been one of his last ones before he was shot. And he kind of, you know, him and McCartney were at odds at that point.
Always,
And he kind of gave a dig at McCartney about having the fact that he created another band after the Beatles.
Right.
Whereas Lennon went solo. And, you know, Lennon's point was at some point, if you're, you know, I'm paraphrasing completely, but he was digging him. In other words, at some point you shouldn't need the other guys around you. You should be able to
it's
do
about
this
you.
Solo.
Yeah.
And so he was making a dig at the fact that McCartney jumped from, it's almost like when somebody gets divorced and they jump instantly into another marriage. It's
okay.
Like, well, you know, couldn't you be single for a little while? I think right. Lennon was saying something similar to
he
that.
He was John Lennon's interesting, man. Some of those interviews, man, he could be snippy with people.
Oh, you definitely. Know what I mean? Yeah. Yeah.
Lennon was anger management issues.
Lennon was a caustic, angry, and to me that's the brilliance of the Beatles that McCartney was so sugary and sweet and
right.
You know, and the pop guy, and then Lennon was the angry, you know,
yeah.
Didn't believe in anything.
Like I know
God,
he,
but and in their ways, they each had that element. But to me, the Beatles are great because they were a combination of the two.
Like I had read a story somewhere where he, like George Martin, who produced them or whatever, had, I don't remember what specifically George Martin had said, like something about him producing one of the songs, and John Lennon wrote him like a 4-page letter telling him why he didn't produce that track, and you know this is what happened, and I'm like, just that's very like.
Right.
You have time for that? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're fucking John Lennon. What the fuck, man?
Right. Like, to me, there's no clearer example of the two of them than their Christmas songs that they put out solo. Simply Have a Wonderful Christmas.
Right, exactly. Like,
and that is so vapid of a song. And then, to me, anyway, some people love that song. Some people
totally.
Just love the pop sensibility. And then Lennon writes, "So this is Christmas. What have you done?
I know it's so,
war is over. If you want it, like even in a Christmas song, Lennon couldn't put the messages aside. He couldn't put the anger aside. He couldn't put the conflict aside. That to me, it just shows the two of them and the song. And again, the Beatles are great because it combined those two forces.
Yeah, even like in the song "Getting Better," right? You know, it's getting better
all
the time.
To admit, it's getting better. And Lennon
can't
goes,
get much
it can't
worse.
Get much worse. Exactly. That, you know, that's a great example of just
push
the two
and pull
of them
there for sure.
Push and pull. Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
What else? What do you
so
got?
Does
what?
That exist in the Stones? Is Jagger, McCartney, and is Keith Richards Lennon?
Probably. I think that's a good analogy. Yeah. And but I think, you know, I think Keith Richards also gets a lot more credit for writing some of the riffs, the classic riffs, and he has written probably a majority of them. But like Mick wrote Brown Sugar. Like Mick, that's Mick.
But he wrote the riff of that?
Yeah,
or?
He wrote the Yeah, okay. that's all Mick. And okay. I think that there's probably more of those through the recordings of the Stones from Brown Sugar on where Mick knew, okay, this is a cool Keith riff. Now Keith writes riffs probably just walking home. You know,
right.
You know what I mean? Like they're always so Mick is trying to write a Keith riff.
Right.
Which is the difference there. But I think Mick's probably writing most of the lyrics and Keith's probably coming up with like the hook, the line that's the song, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
I love the fact when he came up with the Satisfaction riff.
Right.
He wanted it played on horns because he felt it sounded better. But, you know, they didn't have a horn section in the and so he played it on guitar. But then who covered that song? Otis Redding?
Yes.
And did it on horns. And Keith said, yeah, see that sounds better. He knew instantly that is the song. And it's right. That riff does sound better.
Oh, it's
I
totally
love the
right.
Otis Redding version of that because it does that riff is awesome.
Well, I hope you play that at some cocktail party somewhere.
I've played that song. I mean, listen, Satisfaction isn't the greatest dancing song. It's a great example.
People like it.
A lot of artists, their best song isn't their best dancing song. Born to Run by Bruce is a great example. Born to Run is his signature song. It's not even in his top five of good dancing.
Oh, totally.
If I get a Bruce request at a wedding and I got a packed dance floor, I'm going with Glory Days. With Dancing in the Dark. If they're huge Bruce fans, I'm going with Rosalita.
Definitely.
Born to Run is his, that's his, signature song, but it's not his best.
And then there's always that college crowd that probably wants Thunder Road, I would imagine, right?
Yes, that's another one. Again, it's a little bit more mellow and then it picks up. But yeah, I mean, Thunder Road is a great sing-along,
totally
fun song.
I do find Bruce songs hard to sing along to because he moves, so his changes the lyrics so quickly. You know what I mean? Like, you get halfway through and you're like, ugh.
Well, right. Like, Thunder Road doesn't even have a chorus, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, it doesn't have a repeatable.
You think that Thunder Road part is the chorus. You know, right, Thunder Road, right. But that's not really a chorus necessarily, right?
Only Bruce could get away with, what's the line in there? You ain't no beauty, but hey, you're all right. What a fucking horrible thing to say to a woman. But somehow coming out of Bruce's mouth, it sounded okay.
Yeah, exactly. It's all right. Don't worry about it.
So listen, I know you're a big Stones fan. Do you like The Who at all?
I do love The Who, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you get their new album this year?
I have not, no.
So it came out, I think, earlier in the winter. Or actually, this says 2019, so maybe it came out late last year. It's simply called Who.
Okay.
I love it. I think it's a throwback to some of their early, early 60s, mid 60s stuff. And not into it lately, but when it came out, that was the record that I listened to kind of nonstop. I thought that was a great new release.
That's awesome.
So if you're looking for classic.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I love when, that's an interesting thing. I was listening to Jagger, who said maybe a few years back that he really didn't want to, they're working on a new album for like the last 6 years, but he kind of got tired of releasing new records because he kind of got tired of having to slot in a hole or create a hole or an opening for the new song. You know what I mean? He got kind of tired.
At a concert.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was like, nobody really, he's like, it's something that people don't want to talk about, artists, but they don't really come to see the Stones to hear the new tune. They'd much rather save that for, Paint It Black.
I don't know if I told you the story, but I went to see The Who a couple years ago. They were touring playing Quadrophenia, which is a double album and doesn't have a lot of hits on it. Doesn't have a lot of recognizable songs. So, I mean, it was a fun concert, but it was a little bit of a challenge to sit through the entire thing. They finally get to the end. I think the last song of Quadrophenia is Love Rain Over Me. So they finally get a record and everybody's singing along. Finally, they introduced the band. They hadn't said a word they just played each song, introduced the band, and Townsend goes, so we've got a little bit more time here. He goes, we're going to play some new music that we've been working on. And the crowd goes like, oh, okay. And then he goes, fuck it, we'll give you some greatest hits. And the place goes, And they finish with a half hour of, Who Are You and My Generation. Ugh. Yeah, I mean, that's a perfect example. People don't want their music.
Yeah, listen, we're diehard fans of our favorite artists, right? So we would want to hear how that's going to sound live. I think Prince probably and the Stones and probably The Who and a lot of bands wrote material that was going to perform well live at some point.
Right.
But still
the crowd has to be familiar with it.
Definitely.
If the crowd is not familiar with the song, no matter how good, I guarantee the first time the Stones played Satisfaction, assuming that it hadn't been out on record already, people were probably like, all right.
Exactly.
I mean, it's just, I tell this story in the seminar I did last year, talk about familiarity. I forget the year, maybe it was 6 or 7 years ago. I got turned on to a song. A friend of mine sent it to me and I was like, this is hot. It's got a great hook to it. It's going to be a great dance song. that weekend, I played it at a wedding, beat it in perfectly, cleared the dance floor.
Wow.
Yeah.
Blurred Lines.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. I cleared the dance floor because people weren't familiar with it.
Sure.
3 weeks later, that song had blown up. Remember the video with the naked models?
Yeah.
It had gone viral. And I felt like calling the bride and saying, hey, could you give me the phone number of every one of your guests? Because I want to tell them I told you so. But that's,
I mean, and it's familiar. Still a play. It's still played now. You know
oh
what
my
I mean?
God, that, it's still now. But yeah. I played it
and there's
too
a whole
early
heap
in
of controversy
run.
Surrounding it now. They've yeah, come back yeah. and spoken out
I,
against
I played
their own
it
song.
Too early in its run. And that's, you know, yeah. So I don't blame Jagger for saying, yeah, why bother making new yeah. music? They're not going to make any money off of it.
Right.
And,
like,
right.
They
all
released
it's
a couple
is
of years ago. Yeah, they released a couple of years ago like a new blues record of old blues tunes.
Right, right.
Which kind of made sense for the material that they're working right. on. Like, you can always throw a blues song
in the mix.
Did they
tour with that?
No, they've been on that like ongoing right. tour, so they've added them to the couple of to the tour. Right. But anyway, while we're
Give
on the Stones, one. On the we're on the Stones, I you know, Exile on Main Street. Yeah.
Your favorite album?
I think so, yeah. I think ultimately. I mean, between Sticky Fingers and that one, but I think for me, so, Exile's the meatier one.
Here's a question I get asked often, from time to time, I should
sure.
say. Somebody wants to get turned on to Prince. Mm. What's the one album I should listen to? So if I'm going to ask you that question, if I'm not familiar with the Stones, and don't give me a greatest hits.
Yeah.
I'm not familiar with the Stones at all, or a live album. What one album should I use to introduce myself to your band? What would you tell them?
I would say it's not Exile on Main Street.
That's
because
not.
I feel, besides Tumbling Dice, there aren't a number of hit songs off of Exile on Main Street. In fact, Exile is probably the only hit song, right? So I would say, I would actually probably say Some Girls with Miss You.
Right.
And Shattered.
What is
and,
that, 78-ish?
78, yeah.
Yeah,
because or Tattoo You even, because that's yeah. that has spurred a number of hits, you know,
right.
or Sticky Fingers. I think right. Sticky Fingers has got Brown Sugar and Can't You Hear Me Knocking and Wild
Sticky
Horses.
Fingers is the Andy
Zip.
Warhol designed
yeah.
zipper. That what a great that's in my book.
But what about for Prince? What's the answer for you?
So the answer for me is Sign of the Times.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, it's a double album, so you get a lot more for your money. And to me, it just has everything in it. It was Prince at his artistic height. He was free, not free from his record labels, but he was so famous that he could pretty much do anything he wanted to at that point.
Right.
There's some great rock sound on that. There's some great funk sound on that. There's some great pop sound on that. That's the album I've recommended people. If you just want to be introduced, obviously Purple Rain is probably the obvious answer.
That's
but my
what
assumption
I thought, yeah.
is most people know some of the songs off of Purple Rain.
Yeah.
They're
it's,
going
it's actually
to,
one of the toughest questions to be asked because, you know, and maybe I also altered that answer based on the person I'm talking to as well.
That could be. Yeah.
You know, if I know it's a, you know, if I know they're probably into like some dance stuff, I'd probably say that Miss You. I want them to hear Miss You. I want them
right.
to get into that, you know.
Right.
If I know the person's really into artistry and a varying degree, then Exile for sure, because it's there's right. all those different types of songs that are on it, you know.
Right. Cool.
Yeah, another one? What do you got?
So I'm going to give you one of my favorite albums in the last few years. David Byrne.
Okay.
Who, you know, the lead singer of Talking Heads.
Yes.
Put out an album called American Utopia about 2 years ago. It is a phenomenal album. He toured on this album for about a year and a half. Kelly and I went to see the tour twice. And it was the most mind-blowing tour, especially the first time we saw it. If you can picture a stage with nothing on it, no bandstand, no instruments, no nothing. Every one of the musicians and singers had mobile devices and walked and danced the stage with nothing on it. It was a mind-blowing experience
wow.
to see it. And now he's taken that to Broadway. He just finished a run. Good for him because he finished before this whole thing happened.
Yeah, for sure.
And Kelly and I didn't get to see it this winter, but we bought tickets for this fall. We're going to go see it on Broadway. From what I understand on Broadway, it's very similar. So the album itself, I love, and especially the live application of it. If you have a chance, Google any of the David Byrne stuff. Like, you'll be blown away. It was really I almost wish I was high the first time I had seen it, because I was tripped out as it was. But if I had been stoned, it would have been even more. I would have been like, "What the fuck is going on?"
Yeah, I'm excited to get stoned. And with my record night, I have not listened to Exile because I want to be stoned when I do that. But
I don't know if that's the one I would listen to stoned. I think I would probably pick a trippier. And I'm not as familiar with Stone's albums as you are. So, but I think of Exile as a very upbeat, and I know that, what is it, the first half is mellow and the second half is,
I think the first is like Rocks Off and all those kind of like faster
songs.
So
the first half is upbeat, right? Yeah. Don't they even say on the back, flip the album, don't they say listen to side one?
Yes.
With the lights on and side two.
Something like that.
Is there a note on there?
There is a note on
that.
You
have the album. Look it up.
Let's see. Hold up. Let's see.
I thought there was a note on the back of the album about that.
But you know, this is a reprint. You know what I mean?
So they might not.
They pull all the...
So maybe side two I'd listen to, Stone.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to listen to the whole thing, Stone. I can't wait. Right. Here's one also, a guy. I'm going to show it to you on my phone. A guy that we both like, I think. And I think you met him. Let's see if I can just pull his picture up. And I bet you people are going to be like, I don't know who this is.
Oh, I love Pete Yorn. My God. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Pete Yorn's first album dropped just as I was getting divorced, and that
what is his first album? Is the one
music for the morning,
after? Yeah, yeah. I mean that's I love all of Pete Yorn's records. There was one that I was like, but for the most part, every single one of them. And I don't know if you heard his very last one, Caretakers, is phenomenal.
Sure. Yeah,
it's awesome.
Yeah, he's one of those artists. I buy everything he puts out.
Same.
Yeah. But that first album came out just as I was getting my divorce. And so I was kind of at that crossroads, middle age crisis, whatever.
Sure.
And that album still to this day speaks to me. It can bring me right back to that time. And what a powerful, powerful.
Yeah. And
album.
On that record for people that
New Jersey guy, right? Montclair,
yes.
I think.
Yes. You met him. Yes.
Yes, I did. I met him a few times actually when that first album first came out, he was doing a record signing in Tower Records in Lower Manhattan. I got my album signed by him. And then, the last time he played at the Stone Pony, it was one of those, like, we paid extra for a meet and greet.
Totally
and,
cool.
You know, shook his hand and whatever.
Yeah.
Throwing away 75 bucks. But, it was nice.
But why not?
Right, why not?
You know, exactly. My thing was when they have that experience, why
I've thrown,
not meet
I've
the artist?
I've thrown $75 away on stupider things. So, yeah,
exactly. Yeah. I'll probably do it today. But, Life on a Chain, right? Yes. Strange Condition, Just Another, such a beautiful song.
Great. That whole first album, just...
Closet, you know? I mean, just, you have to, I think if you're listening to this, you have got to listen to Pete Yorn's Music for the Morning After.
Yeah.
Curious.
Yeah, if you're gonna listen to one Pete Yorn album, get his first one.
It's incredible.
And then kind of go from there. Yeah. And then the second one, see if you agree with this, Peter.
Yeah.
What was the name of the album that he put out with Scarlett Johansson?
Oh, Relator or Realtor? Whatever. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Or Breakup. The Breakup, I think it's
the Breakup.
That's it.
Freaking ridiculously good album.
I mean, honestly, the only record that I was like a little bit like, was
Break
what
up.
Arranging Time, maybe was the only one I was like, I don't know if I love that one.
You know what I didn't love by him? He made a band.
He's probably like,
album.
Fuck you guys, I don't care.
Oh,
I did. Yeah, I didn't love that either.
Yeah, I bought it and just didn't love it. But
But for the most part, it's all really good and powerful stuff. Like, I think it's the perfect record to listen to in these times for sure.
Yeah,
you know, you just need a mood filler. Now I'm gonna bust out. I'm gonna bust out a band. I'm curious your take on this band.
Never a big fan, man. I remember their TV show used to be on repeats when I was growing up, and I watched the shows a couple times. I mean, yeah, some of their hits I respect, but I've just never had an affinity towards them.
Now, did you not spend enough time with them, or did the TV show make them feel too goofball for you?
Yeah, probably. If I had only heard the music and not seen and been aware of the TV show, I might have appreciated them. But I mean, there's not a lot of that 60s, I'll call it like pop rock.
Uh-huh.
That I like anyway. you know, I'm not a big fan of the Turtles and things like that. So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of not one of my the genres that I really love. But, yeah, I mean, I don't hate them, but I've just never, I don't own anything.
Should the Monkees be in the Hall of Fame, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Sure. Yeah, I'm not.
Yeah, why not?
I don't have a problem with the fact that they were a made-up group. I mean, a lot of groups, you know, were.
I mean, they had a ton of hits. You can argue that they're other people's songs, but, I mean.
But a lot of bands became famous covering other people's songs.
Totally. So, yeah. You got another one? You got another one?
Well, you know what? When we brought up Pete Yorn and Scarlett Johansson, it reminded me one of my absolute favorite albums of the last 20 years is an album called Raising Sand. Are you familiar with it?
I'm not. No.
Robert Plant.
Ooh,
and
okay.
Alison Krauss.
I think I am familiar with it now that you say that.
The combination of their voices together was so effing phenomenal, and it's nothing original. They did all covers, although really super obscure covers, so you'd never know. I don't think there's any one song on here that people would probably recognize. It's a very chill, talk about like just getting stoned, lighting some candles,
2007-ish.
Yeah, 2007. And I really, when you said come prepared with some albums to listen to, I that wasn't one of them, but I thought of it when, because similar to Pete Yorn and Scarlett Johansson, a lot of the magic of that album is just the way their voices sound together.
Yeah.
Raising Sand.
I would love to like just play it and like, but because of the mute, I'm just not going to do it.
Yeah, don't do it. But anyone who's listening, if you want to, especially tonight, if you want to wind down.
Yeah.
If you're going to make a hot bath for yourself and just try that album. I just think it, and I listen to it often still to this day.
Now, maybe not this record, but this artist. What do you think of Ryan Adams? Do you know Ryan Adams?
I'm familiar a little bit with his stuff, not a lot. Uh-huh. But he has a lot of shit.
Yeah.
I don't know if you follow the news, but he's sort of in the R. Kelly.
No, he has a whole thing surrounded by him.
Yeah. Going back to that seminar I did last year, I talked about avoiding R. Kelly because people say, well, who are you? Judge and jury? He hasn't even found guilty yet. I'm not judge and jury, but as a DJ, the last thing I want to do is pull my guests out of the party and make them remember something shitty. And so,
and that's sort of why I brought up Ryan Adams, because now I know you probably wouldn't play Ryan Adams at a wedding.
Well, that was the joke. I said, put Ryan Adams. I'm not looking to put my guests to sleep, but I lump him. I lump him now in the same category.
Yeah. Okay. But what about Michael Jackson?
No, because he was tried and found not guilty.
Uh huh.
And he's dead now. So to me, I know a documentary came out right around the same time as R. Kelly's.
Sure.
It was rehashed. It was stuff that there were no new allegations in that. I don't think it was all, and he's not here to defend himself. So I can tell you from my client's points of view, I see no R. Kelly on almost every playlist. I don't see no Michael Jackson. So,
right. And you know, I don't know. He's just, there's so many big time hits. It's hard to remove that. You know what I mean? It's hard.
Yeah, but I've done a handful of weddings with no Michael Jackson, and it's not like there's this big gaping hole in my programming.
Right.
There are more than enough great dance songs that you can get by without Michael Jackson. So,
has anyone said that to you? I don't want any Michael Jackson playing.
Yes, I see no Michael Jackson on my request list from time to time, but not that all. And I don't even know if that's because of the accusations or just because some people don't like
Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Because somebody asked me these the other day, and I thought they were intriguing. You see a lot of concerts. What's the best opening act you've ever seen?
Ooh, that's a good one.
Is that a great question?
It is a really good question. Okay, well, now, I've seen so many Stones shows that I've gotten to see a lot of people, like, right before they hit it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Or at some point established. Let me pose it this way.
Have you ever seen an opening act blow away an opening act blow away the headliner?
No.
I did. I went to see Lenny Kravitz probably about 20 years ago, and the Black Crowes opened up. Other than their hits, I really wasn't familiar with the Black Crowes at all.
Yeah.
They blew him away. By the time Kravitz took the stage, I was like, you want to get out of here? Like I was so, and I was there to see. Lenny
okay,
Kravitz.
I did. Mashbacks, Everclear. Do you know the band Everclear at all?
Sure, yeah.
Everclear,
you love them, right?
I do.
Yeah.
Everclear opened up for Matchbox 20, and I thought Everclear was phenomenal, and they've got such a high energy.
Right.
And then Matchbox 20 came out, and there was just, you know what I mean? Like, the energy was sucked out of the room. So I literally took our two tickets, because we got pretty close seats, and I gave them to somebody all the way at the back.
Wow. And yeah. You left?
That's cool. And I left because I didn't want to fucking sit through it. Right. You know, I was like, but these people came here to see Matchbox 20. They didn't have the same experience. So maybe Everclear was a great opening act in that scenario, but I also have seen, like, Alanis Morissette set open for the Stones. I saw Lenny Kravitz open for the Stones.
Right.
And he was in Foo Fighters.
And then this is sort of the same type of question. Yeah. What was the headliner that disappointed? Do you remember being totally disappointed by a headliner?
Yeah, I do. I do. I mean, and I can't think of her name. The King of Anything, Sarah Bareilles.
Oh, okay.
Now, on record, these songs are gripping, right? I mean, like, you're like, oh my God, like almost Norah Jones to a degree, right? Like, where you're just like, she's such a phenomenal voice.
Right.
But I don't know, maybe it's because, and I'm curious to your answers about these questions as well, but maybe it's because I do come from, like, the Rolling Stones kind of big rock shows, or the Everclear shows, or McCartney or Bowie. I've seen all those guys live. And so I love those big shows, and Tom Petty and all that stuff. So maybe I need that experience at a concert.
Yeah, see, to me, it's not even the size of the show. It's the interaction of the...
That too.
The headliner or the band. I remember I saw the Cars in the early 80s in Forest Hills. I was still living in Queens at the time. And I loved the Cars. I think they had two or three albums out at the time. Loved them. Was so disappointed by that concert. They didn't sound like they did on the record, which sometimes, and I don't mean that in a good way, I mean it in a bad way. They just sounded, and no interaction.
So sometimes that could be a good thing.
Right, exactly. Yeah, no interaction from Rick Ocasek or anything. And then, are you familiar with Seal?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
His first album, which I don't know, I forget what year that came out. To me, to this day, that's still one of the most important albums of my life. I freaking love it. Listen to it front to back all the time. Went to see him at the Art Center. I think maybe his second album had just come out. Didn't look at the audience, was looking down the entire time, didn't interact. And I didn't walk out of the show, but I remember being very disappointed. And then a friend of mine just saw him a few years ago and said it was a phenomenal show.
Interesting.
So apparently Seal has come a long way, or I just caught him on a really bad night. But yeah, those are probably the two that stand out to me.
And for the Sarah Bareilles thing, similarly to you, where... as an important record, right? It was right at the shift of me going on my own and opening up my own wedding business and all that stuff. So her record at that time, I was listening to it and it struck a chord with me. So I went in there with open arms and open ears, I guess. You know what I mean? Like, I was looking for that sort of emotional experience and being connected to her and her music, because I think she's a phenomenal artist. But she started off just playing songs that nobody knows. You know what I mean? It must have been a new record shit. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And I remember Christina and I were there, and there was another couple that we don't know, and their faces were as equally as offended. You know?
Right.
And the dude was like, fuck this. He said that. And they started heading for the door, and I was like, let's go, babe. And we left and followed them behind. Maybe the rest of the concert, but we did about five songs, and it was all new material stuff. And I was like, man, I guess we're not doing King of Anything.
The only thing, the only time I can remember doing that was Santana. But that's one of those situations. Kelly and I went because the opening act was Los Lonely Boys. And we loved that. It was right after that first album dropped, and we loved that album. So we went basically to see the opening act. And then it was a half hour in, so probably two songs, because Santana is kind of like a jam band thing. And I looked at her, and she looked at me, and we were like, let's get
done.
I think it was at the Garden, and we had taken the train in. So we're looking at the train schedule, and we're like, if we leave now, we can make the 9 o'clock train instead of waiting for the 10. So we left. Yeah. You know,
I've had a very negative experience with Santana as well. He opened up for the Stones in San Diego once, and we were super excited to see him because that sounds like a great fucking bill.
Right.
Carlos Santana and the Rolling Stones. Oh, my God. How does it get any better? It couldn't get worse. You know what I mean? Like,
I'm just not into 10 minutes guitar solos.
Guitar solos. No, me either.
I'm sure there's virtuoso in there and there's talent, but
of course.
I don't want to sit through it. Sorry.
No, not live. Yeah. You know what I mean? You know, maybe on record, Stoned, like you said, you know, before.
And maybe one during like an entire 2.5 hour concert, you know, one guitar solo might impress me.
Right.
But not every single song. You don't have to air out every single song, turn it into a 20-minute opus.
No.
It gets
And I guess there's guitar fans that, you know, are probably like, what's wrong with you guys? You know?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Now we can wrap.
Hold up. One more question because but speaking of live concert experiences, I know that you got to see the Bruce Springsteen on Broadway.
I did.
And I did not get to see that. But what was that experience
It was phenomenal. And let me start by saying I'm not even that big of a Bruce fan.
Right.
I put a list of 25 top artists to get my 20, and he's not even on it. So I respect his music. I don't hate Bruce. I mean, I respect his musicianship, his output, everything else, but he's just not up there. But the format that I heard about, it just sounded so cool to me, like an unplugged type of thing. And then, you know, the reason why I had to go see it, Howard Stern raved about it.
Yes.
So that was the final nail in the coffin. I thought it was amazing. It was incredible. What a storyteller he is. What a, you know, he knows how to deliver a story, knows how to deliver a line. I was kind of disappointed right after we saw it. It came to Netflix, so I guess I could have saved all that money. Have you seen it on Netflix?
I was moved to tears.
Yeah.
I don't think I could watch it again. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it was so emotional.
It was similar. I didn't watch the whole thing on Netflix, but I watched a lot of it. And it was basically, so it was that, but obviously live, and Kelly and I had gotten great seats. I think we were in like the third row. It was amazing. Yeah.
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 Well, that's awesome, man. Thanks again for doing this. Let's do this again.
Yeah, let's do it.
Some more
records. I think I'm going to have the time in the next few weeks. I might be able to carve out some time for it.
Same here. And listen,
let's do it after 5 o'clock next time so I can join you and have a drink.
Please. Yeah. And, you know, maybe get some pictures, like print some pictures so you can talk about the record. You know what I mean? Like with a printed picture. Instead. So I have these records here, you know?
Well, I'll get them on my phone so I can just hold up the phone.
Yeah, that works too. Yeah. All right, man. Thanks so much for doing this, bro. All right.
Pleasure. Give my love to Christina.
Will do. And to Kelly as well. Okay. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.
Thanks for listening. For updates, check out poppodcast.com.